Blossom Your Awesome Podcast, episode number 119. Today on the show, modern day mystic Mark Kolak is here with us. He is on this planet to liberate souls from ego bondage and rise above to take their rightful place in the emerging new world. Mark is a speaker, coach, author, trainer, performing artist, and is dedicated to the upliftment of humankind and a future world of peace. I am so honored and delighted to have Mark here with us, sharing his incredible wisdom and insights. Thank you so much for being here. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sue, so much for inviting me.
I am so excited to get into your story and the work you do, because you are on this planet to help liberate souls from ego bondage, rise up. I just love this. Talk to us about this, the work you do, and give us a little of the backstory first, like how you got into this line of work.
Well, like most of you, I started out as a child, and it's been all downhill from there. And, you know, we all have a childhood story. So I had my broken family, and I had to get in touch with myself through my childhood. And I was always sort of a coach kind of person. My friends always came to me for things. And by the time I was in intermediate school, I started getting downloads from the Ascended Masters. And I don't know if you're familiar with that group, but ascended beings who come to the planet to help us to be able to move forward and birth the new world. And so by the time I finished college, I went to college in Europe, and living in France, of course, for 2 years, in Holland for a couple of years, very much being incorporated with the idea of cultural renaissance. In Europe, that's kind of what you study, cultural renaissance, besides language and art and dance and music and the things that I was studying. So, and I was sitting in the Church of Saint Germain one night on the Boulevard Saint-Germain, Saint-Michel in Paris, and I got a download from Saint Germain, who was my guide, who said that, you know, later on in your life, you're going to be privy to and a part of a, not a cultural revolution, but a spiritual renaissance. And so you're here collecting parts of your consciousness that you left back in the 17, 1800s to be able to bring all those things forward and then utilize them in the helping to birth humanity into this new world. And so I've been waiting sort of for 40 years, you know, for that to happen, during which time I just followed myself around. I was always guided inwardly. Some people are more guided inwardly, I think, than others, or more overtly. So I always had a very bit of a gypsy. I always had more of an, never stayed in the same place at the same time for very long. I lived in the mountains of Sedona. I lived in ashrams. I sailed a 55-foot catamaran across the Pacific Ocean. I lived in New Zealand for a number of years. I studied with great physical and non-physical enlightened masters. And along the way, just picked up tips, tools, studied coaching. I do yoga, meditation. So I'm a yogi and a meditation teacher as well. I play music and write kind of new age, new thought musicals that combine a lot of comedy stuff and a lot of downloads for higher energies, transformational things. And my coaching practice, which comes from all of that, really is also very transformational in the idea that you opened up with, which is this idea of soul bondage. You know, it seems like if we really wanted to look at the world in a real encapsulated kind of way and say, well, what in the world is going on here? Why are things the way they are? And, you know, if my humble opinion, it's because humans, we as a race, we haven't really made the distinction between our soul and our ego. And so we have these minimum two voices in our heads going on, sometimes an entire chorus, which is a whole other conversation. But these two voices in our heads, one of the higher mind and one of the lower mind, and each one has its useful place and its useful position. So the way I like to look at it, Sue, is that we are the dweller on the threshold between two parallel worlds. We have a higher world and a lower world. And we have an operating system or a navigational system for both of those worlds. For the lower world, we have ego and personality. And for higher world, we have intuition and the voice of the heart, which speaks as the intuition, which is what I would call the God self or the God presence. And so at any one moment in our daily activities, we're always faced with challenges. In case you haven't figured that out yet, being a human on the planet, we're always faced with challenges. So it's not a question of if, it's a question of when the next challenge shows up, how are we going to manage that? And how are we going to respond? And so normally, most of us, until we get on a spiritual path and start to do transformational work and start to do healing work, we respond from lower self, from fear, because ego is based in fear. So ego is always going to respond from fear. Whereas the heart never responds in fear because the heart doesn't know fear. Because according to the original creation of the divine, fear doesn't exist. It's like a construct of the lower world and the forces who are dominating the lower world and trying to control us through fear. So at any one moment, we have the opportunity to choose. But if people don't know that they have a choice, or they haven't distinguished the voice of the intuition from the voice of the lower mind or the ego, then we're responding or reacting negatively through fear. And then we have thoughts, we have feelings, and then we produce actions. And those actions produce more unintended outcomes for us in our lives. So the world is like this synopsis of unintended outcomes all intermingling together and birthing other unintended outcomes until finally all the systems of the world just don't function anymore, as evidenced by the banks collapsing recently and whatever is about to come. And the systems don't work because they're out of integrity and they're based in fear and they were created in fear. So the good news behind all of that is that globally, as well as personally, the divine never left the creation. So whatever we call it, God, source, universe, angels, guides, teachers, masters, that entourage, that reality is, in my mind, the true reality, the only reality, and everything else is like a false reality. But we subscribe to that false reality, and then we make it real for ourselves. Call it the Matrix. And then we wander around in there, and then we do things and say things based on what's going on in that lower world, and get deeper and deeper and deeper into the Matrix. So the idea is that's globally for the individual. The idea is to extricate ourselves from the mortal concept of our own self. To evacuate the mortal concept of ourself to connect with the divinity and our own divine sovereignty. And so how does one do that? And in simple terms, through practice. Connecting with our divinity is like a muscle. Whatever religion one chooses, whatever spiritual discipline or path one chooses, we learn certain principles that distinguish that path for us. God is love. Everything always works out. As I put my heart into the right place, all manner of seen and unforeseen good comes to my aid. So these are like ideas or values or principles. So first, for me, it's like extracting what the principles are that we want to believe in or subscribe to. Because we know the universe is designed and run by principles. A lot of people don't know or understand until we start to study that because the universe is governed by principles, it's really good to know what some of those principles are. Otherwise, we're going around producing unintended outcomes all the time. So for me, it was distinguishing what those principles were. Mm-hmm. And then the other two parts to that.
And what are those principles?
Well, just like I just said, you know, the idea that we are one, everything is divine in reality. In the beginning, there was original creation of pure light and pure love. And that energy lives inside of us, that we are sparklets of the divine. And as we connect with those sparklets, with that sparklet, which is our own soul, with inside of us, then it starts to change and transform our lower life and our lower world. And it starts to awaken our higher chakras and our higher mind functions so that we begin to open the third eye and have that single eye looking out into the world. And that single eye connects us with our heart. And the heart is intuition. So as we learn to view life from our hearts and not from our heads, then everything starts to change. So those are, in a sense, our principles, things that you could adhere to, things that one could believe in, and set a context for oneself. And I set a context for myself as I started to accumulate, you know, these ideas and these principles and stuff as I started to grow in my spiritual practice. Back in the day when I was living in Sedona, for example, which was back in 1972. And I just come back from Europe, and I was living in Sedona. I was living in an ashram in the hills there, where the ascended masters were channeling information through my spiritual teacher, who's long gone now. But we were privy to a model of reality, a perspective, a point of view, which told us that we were divine. And that our problem wasn't that we were unworthy, because that's the main issue, I think, with most people who come to coaching. Most people who come to therapy is we're not good enough. We're brought up feeling like we're not good enough. Bad, wrong, stupid, unloved, unlovable, incapable, inadequate, unseen, unheard. But those are lies. Because as a soul, our soul, none of those things could possibly be true. Because to say any of those things are true about us is to say that they're true about God. And that's impossible. So we don't really have an unworthiness issue as a humanity, we have an identity crisis. We forgot that we're divine. So spending one's time through like yoga and prayer and meditation, reconnecting with that principle or that reality or that perspective or that structure of possibility begins to awaken that reality within the individual. So when I started to say a few minutes ago, it's all about practice. We practice doing that because all throughout the day, when we respond to challenges in the world, the ego is the first operating system to kick in. And something happens, we respond out of fear. And then we have to take that step back and take a few breaths. It's very simple, really. It's just doing it. That's the challenge. So it's practicing moving away from thoughts or feelings that are making us upset. Distinguishing what are the thoughts that are creating these feelings in my body now. And then working with the thoughts and saying, are these high thoughts or low thoughts? Are they useful in the material world? Or do I not really need to be thinking them right now? Are they thinking me? As opposed to me, the soul, the sovereign being, thinking them. So once we make that distinction where we start to think the thoughts that we want to think, rather than having reactive thoughts thinking our soul, and dominating our soul, and dominating our heart, and dominating our intuition, and then therefore dominating our experience. So once we start to make those sort of connections where we're the ones who are the observer, right? And we're watching our situation day to day, moment to moment. And when things come up and we find ourselves going, and freaking out, we can ask ourselves, what am I thinking now? Do I need to be afraid? What is this fear really about? Because the feelings are all generated by thoughts. So thoughts create feelings. So it's hard to just change one's feelings without changing one's thoughts first. So the moment-to-moment process is working with our thinking. Now, masters, great gurus and sadhus and rishis are masters because why? What is it that they've mastered? And what they've mastered is, well, a bunch of things, but one of the things is their thinking. And most people aren't even aware that thinking is something that needs to be mastered. So we're run by these lower thoughts and the ego, of course, which is based in fear. Just like, I don't know, do you have children? Do you have children?
I don't, no.
Oh, okay. Well, you were a kid once.
No,
I was a kid once. We, so, you know, and my daughter, when I was watching her, people they respond oftentimes just out of fear because they're afraid. They're little people and they're living in this big world. And that's how we as grownups are, because that inner child is still responding out of fear. So we watch that inner child within us respond in fear to current situations. And we have the chance to say, hey, inner child, you don't need to respond in fear. Because why? Oh, because I have this whole series of principles that I've identified in my life that I keep right in the back of my mind, right on the tip of my tongue. I am light. I'm totally awesome. I'm totally powerful. I'm a child of God. I'm a sparklet of the divine. All things work out and all things work together for good for those who have love and have love in their hearts and love others. And so I run those by myself really, really quickly. And then all of a sudden, the ego stuff goes and it calms down. And the fears calm down. And then the higher energy kicks in. And you accompany that with a couple of good Kundalini yoga breaths. And you pull that energy up from the base of your spine and bring it up into your heart and open, expand your throat and expand your third eye with it. And then you're in a completely different place. And it only takes 2 minutes, sometimes less. So it's about keeping that discipline, in a sense, that vigilance on a moment-to-moment basis. And that's where the practice comes in. So there's principles, but once we have the principles, then we have to shift our perspectives on things. Because as children or whatever, we grew up, for example, our belief system oftentimes, and the people I work with coaching and mine as well, certainly when I was younger, my belief system was life's hard. I never get what I want. Things never work out for me. People mistreat me. Things aren't fair. And so these belief systems are perspectives that we have come to believe through our experiences. We have an experience as kids, and then we wind up thinking to ourselves, oh, well, shit, that's not right. Or that wasn't fair. Or it's happened to me two or three times now, so life's not fair. Or I'm always being mistreated. Or I'm never being heard. So we say we have these experiences, then we say these things to ourselves, and then once we say them to ourselves a few times, then they go from the contemporary, just sort of superficial part of our mind, and they start to weasel their way into the subconscious mind, and next thing you know, they become our beliefs. And then those are our core beliefs. So our core beliefs, which are unconscious, unexamined, unexpressed, and unhealed, are ruling us, are guiding us, are the platform upon which we stand when we respond and take action in the world. So the time comes when we want to evaluate those things. Does that make sense?
It does. And this is all so, you know, as far as us kind of, you know, so you're saying like many people are living from this unconscious space, and that's what's bringing the ego in, and that's what's bringing the lower vibrations in, and that's what's bringing the trauma and the anxiety and all of the misery, really, right? So what for you, someone who's like a spiritual expert and guru yourself, after having, you know, been given the guidance from the Ascended Masters, what is your guidance for the average person who's unfamiliar with this sort of stuff to raise their vibration and live from this higher space? Is there practical guidance?
Well, I would like to have thought that everything that I've been saying so far has been practical guidance. But just to narrow it down a bit, most of us don't come to transformation until we're at the bottom of our life. And for whatever the reason, that's when the ego goes into humility. So your listeners, hopefully they've already hit rock bottom and they're coming up. So what they're looking for are, like you said, some tools, some tips. Or what I would like to say is to lay out a framework or a pathway, a progression of events that need to occur each step of the way in order to continue one's spiritual unfoldment. So if we start at the bottom and we say that we've reached our rock bottom, we've come up from that, and we're like in humility, and we're going to God, and we're going, please, God, help me. I can't do this on my own anymore. I don't know who you are exactly, and the word God might make me a little nervous, but hey, I got to find some word, universe, source. So in that moment, we've kind of surrendered a little bit. And what is it we've surrendered? So everybody needs to come to a place of surrender. These are like initiations into the higher self. So everybody has to surrender. And what it is that we're surrendering is not what we want. A lot of people think, oh my God, I have to surrender to God. My life's going to become miserable. I'm going to be manipulated by God and going to have to do all these things that I don't want to do. It's like, no, you're already doing that. I'm being dominated by ego. So what we surrender is what we don't want. So we give up our fears and we give up our anxiety and we give up our doubts and we give up our depression and our anxiety and our craziness and the things that make us feel horrible. We just package them up metaphorically or otherwise and say, God, universe, these things, I can't deal with them anymore. Would you please take them? People find ourselves, you know, having come back from, you know, addiction or loss, loved ones. And these are rock bottom places. And where we see that ultimately, oh my God, I got myself here. So in surrender, giving these things up, but also in taking responsibility, that's another principle. Like along the initiation path to the higher self, we have to be willing to examine or accept the possibility that we're not actually the victims that we thought we were. And that's a big one. Like it's hard to move forward on this path if we're still feeling like we're victims. But then the idea is, we kind of take that personally and go, what do you mean? I didn't create this. I'm a good person. Why are these horrible things happening to me? So it's hard sometimes to claim responsibility for ourselves, for our lives, for our path, for our situation. But from a higher perspective, all things work together for good, and we wouldn't be having these experiences if our soul actually wasn't orchestrating them. Ultimately, the soul wants to create whatever experiences it needs to create through us in order for us to fulfill, to burn off our karma and fulfill our dharma, our higher purpose. It's another principle. There's always karma to burn off and dharma to move into. So the soul, in the agreements it made with itself, with God, with our parents, we choose our parents. A lot of people go, oh my God, you know, imagine sitting up there in between incarnations, playing canasta with some angels and going, well, okay, it's time to reincarnate, you know, and then Mother Mary comes up or the goddess and she goes, okay, it's time to reincarnate. Let's see, what you need to do is choose your parents. And so we're like, oh my God, how am I going to choose my parents? And then it's like, well, you want to maximize your incarnation, so you want to find people that, you know, you're going to learn from. And oftentimes I think what we really say to ourselves, oh, I'm going to choose the two most dysfunctional people I can possibly find. And then I'm going to incarnate into their house as their baby. And I think that's what most of us feel like. Like, who are these people? I'm in the wrong family. I started something called the Black Sheep Society recently, which is all of us who feel like we were the black sheep of our families. No one understood us. We were always the sensitive ones. The loving ones, the communicative ones. There's a reason for that. So we choose those parents because they are our greatest teachers. But unfortunately, we often learn in this material world through struggle and sometimes through suffering. So can you take responsibility for that? Can we take responsibility that we chose this life in cahoots with the divine? The divine isn't doing things to us. It's doing things with us, so that we can awaken spiritually. So that's another principle or initiation on the path.
Wow. And, you know, earlier when I asked that question, Mark, it all has been practical guidance, but just to kind of simplify for people who aren't on this path, right? Really was the point of that. Now, you know, talk to us more about this black sheep thing, because I feel like you said, a lot of people are kind of in this boat and may not realize it.
Okay. So if you who are listening and or watching feel like you are kind of the black sheep of your family, claim it. It's a blessing. You're awesome. You are a special person with special gifts and talents. You are highly creative. And I'm here to totally support you in discovering how powerful that position in life can be. So you might have been hurt or abused by family members. That is one of the most powerful things that can happen to us, because it teaches us about love. So you guys are awesome. And if you want to join my club, you can just find me somewhere online and we can communicate. Because the black sheep of the family are the ones who are, in fact, emerging first as the light and moving forward in our everyday experiences, knowing, because inside us black sheep, we know that even though we were told things that made us feel bad about ourselves, inside we knew they weren't true, but we didn't have a voice and we didn't have a mindset or a model to be able to articulate, and we didn't have anybody to talk to about it either. So we wound up taking it on sort of personally. So I'd like to let everybody know that that stuff that we were told wasn't actually true. It was the agreements we made with people to, in a sense, and it's tough to swallow sometimes, I know, but to treat us this way so that we would be forced inward to that voice inside that says, you know what, these things aren't true. And I know these things aren't true. And so all us black sheep, we knew those things weren't true. We know those things aren't true. And we know that we're special people. And we know that we're kind people. And we know that we're caring people. And we know that we're empathetic people. And that we feel what other people feel. And it often gets us into trouble because we give too much. And then we wind up getting screwed for it on some level. So understanding that a little bit about the Black Sheep Society, that these are the sensitive ones, the star seeds. The bunch of us who came to not necessarily make it in the material world and be great industrialists or technologists or whatever, but we're healers. And as we heal the riff inside of ourselves by going deeper into the heart, and again, prayer and meditation, yoga is also useful, or any other practice, going into the heart and listening to that voice of the soul by stilling the mind through prayer, through breath, through yoga, through movement and sound, the mind stills. So meditation then becomes a practice during which we either listen to our thoughts, and that's our meditation for the day, or the thoughts still a little bit, and the beta activity of the mind drops into the alpha theta state a little bit. And then we start to have images and ideas, and we watch through the third eye, which is the portal to the universe. And the images and the shapes and the symbols and the colors and the pictures and the feelings and the voice in the heart, in the throat, through the throat chakra activated by the soul, begin to speak and give us direction and give us my favorite experience, which is peace. So coming to a place of inner peace is probably foundationally, Sue, the most poignant and powerful place that we can go and need to be in order to build a superstructure of outer world activities.
Wow, God, I love this and just everything you are putting down, Mark. Now, let me ask you, you know, for people that are, and really this is here, you know, wanting to help people who aren't very well versed in this stuff and want to tap into getting on a spiritual path and may not even realize the role their own ego plays in a lot of their shortcomings, right? So what is your guidance or advice there for those people to help guide them towards the space of like expansiveness and love? And
well, again, usually it starts with that dark night of the soul, that bottom, rock bottom sort of place. And if you find yourself in a place like that, then one, know that that's the beginning of your new life, that you had to shed that stuff in order to move forward. You had to clear up that stuff and realize that what you were doing wasn't working. And that's perfect. And the next thing is to stop blaming yourself and to stop judging yourself. And then I would create a list of positive aspects of myself and make them into affirmations. I am a kind, loving, empathetic human being. I love to help others. I give from my heart at all opportunities I can. I am powerful, clear, and creative. I love other people, and I love myself and my life. And create a whole bunch of affirmations that then become statements that you say to yourself. If, and not if, but really, but when you start to think thoughts that make you feel bad about yourself, go back to your notebook that you create these affirmations in. So make journaling a part of your practice. Because in journaling, I have libraries of, you know, those composition notebooks that you get in the Walgreens or something for a buck, wide ruled so that I could scribble years and years and years of these notebooks, which contain everything that I was downloading about my experience and onto the paper so that I could read it. And then every time I would get a new affirmation of some kind, like I'd be out in the world, or I'd be playing music, or I'd be doing something or feeling terrible or walking in nature. And then this voice would speak and it would say, "You are a divine being of love." And that's what I would hear and be like, okay. And then I would get out my little pad and then I would go home and transpose it into my composition notebook. I am a divine being of love. So over the years, I have thousands of affirmations, which then become for you, the individual, which then become the template of your new life, of how you want to be, how you want to think. Because the old habitual unconscious way of thinking, or what we call the neural network, which happens through repetitive thinking, what fires together wires together. So you have negative thoughts that are firing off and firing off. And then what happens is they start to wire together. And these little dendrites or whatever they are in the brain creates this actual network. So we need to create a new network of positive things, of loving things, of self-loving things, of affirmative things that affirm our divinity and our self-love and our creativity and our surrender and our devotion and our willingness to help. And then when we say or read, if you need to, those things, every time these other things come up, then two amazing things happen. One is you're not energizing your old neural network anymore because you're moving your consciousness, your mind, your higher mind, away from that repetitive, unconscious, negative, lower spiral things. You're moving your mind away from that, so you're not giving it any energy. And then you're focusing it on the positive affirmations that you have in your composition book, for example. The more you do that, the more you practice that, then what you have in your composition book then starts to build this new network. And this one, because you're not energizing anymore, like leaves in the fall, it just starts to crumble and dissolve and go away. And this new network starts to adhere itself to your superconscious thinking process. So that when challenges occur in the world, you don't go to your default old default way of thinking, but you go to your new, in a sense, default higher mind way of thinking to maintain and stabilize yourself in a higher way of perceiving things. And the foundation for that, of course, is believing it's possible, getting a notebook, surrendering the things you don't want, believing in some higher divine possibility, loving yourself, not judging yourself, not judging others, creating these positive affirmations, using prayer and meditation, and maybe some yoga or another practice that enables you to still the mind so that you can listen. And in the listening is where a lot of the guidance comes from. And then wrapping that up in a nice little package, which is your personal package for self-realization, and then practicing. So we've identified the principles, we've shifted our perspectives to go, oh, well, maybe life does work. Maybe things don't always work out bad for me. Maybe things work out good. So we have to use the principles, shift our perspectives, and then practice. So I like to call it the three P's, the principles, the perspectives, and the practicing. And practicing is the part that your listeners are nothing personal, but probably doing the least of, because the ego doesn't want you to practice. Because the ego is afraid that if it gives up control, it's going to die. And in fact, that's kind of true, but it's okay. So we talk to our ego. That's another part of the practice. And we say, fear mind, lower mind, inner child self, it's okay. I got you. Just sit. Be still. I'm going to move into my spirituality now. And you, lower voice of ego personality, navigational tool for the material world, I'm going to take you with me and raise you up so that you don't have to be afraid anymore. I love you. I love you, ego voice. I love you, fear. I love you, depression. I love you, illness. I love you so much because all these things exist in our life because they want to be loved. And they're existing in our lives and showing themselves in our lives because they're demonstrating to us places where we don't love ourselves, because they're all aspect of ourselves. So rather than pushing these things away and becoming pissed off at them, when you love them, you're giving them what they really want. And then they stop bothering you. So the only reason why they're coming up is because they want to be loved. But instead, we react to them. And what we judge, we lock in place. What we react to becomes our reality. What we judge and lock in place, and we make bad and wrong because we don't like how we feel, and we don't like these feelings, and we don't like how we behave, and all this stuff, then it's like, then we like put those things on a pedestal. It's like, then we create like an idol. And then by our activity of energy towards them, we're like worshiping the things negatively that we're trying to change. So it's backwards. So when we love those things that we're trying to change, then they're like completely freaked out. It's like, what? Oh, I'm being loved now. Oh my God. That's what I've always wanted. That's why I've been acting out like a 9-year-old, 3-year-old, 5-year-old to begin with. I'm being loved. And as soon as they feel love, it's like, oh, I'm feeling, they don't have to act out anymore. And then the pain goes away. And the fear goes away. And the illness goes away. Or whatever it is, because all things are looking for love. So putting that together into a little package, when we practice this model of thinking and being and doing, practicing. And again, just to complete on the thought, it's the practicing of it that's the hardest part, because the ego doesn't want to give up control. But when we love the ego, it goes along with us better. It makes it easier for us to practice. So the more we practice, you know, if you go to the gym, we practiced how to write when we were children. We practiced how to walk. We practiced how to play musical instruments, whatever we've gotten good at to any extent. Not have to be, you know, concert pianist, but we've practiced whatever it is, how to behave. So this is just another thing. It's a muscle. And so when we practice this spiritual muscle, the more we practice, the better we get. And then the mind switches on. Finally, it like slips through into this higher dimension permanently. So that there's always challenges, but there's no more struggle and there's no more suffering. And that's what comes with practice.
Wow, Mark, that is all so beautiful and so powerful. So a couple of things. First of all, I just want to say you have been so amazing and so enlightening. And I would love, I feel like we're just kind of scratching the surface here. I would love to circle back and do this with you again and have you come back and go deeper with us on this and share some more amazing wisdom with us. So first and foremost, you've been amazing. And I just thank you so much for your time and all of your incredible insights today.
Thanks, Sue. It's been an honor and a privilege. You know, again, I honor everything that you're doing. So, and the opportunity to be able to share this perspective or this model of reality based on almost 50 years of conscious spiritual practice. Again, practice. has been a gift, you know, for me, just to put it out there. And the universe needs more of a different model. Like, what can we think that's different, that's going to get us through this veil of these shadows and things? So any opportunity to share that with other people, it's a blessing for me.
Oh, I love that. And now, again, thank you so much. But in closing, you've already said so many amazing things. But your closing message, what is that message? What is your hope for everyone? What would you like to leave us with? As long as you'd like to go, share that closing message.
Okay. What I'd like to end with, what I'd like to share with everybody in my closing message is that try taking your eyes off of the creation, meaning what's going on in the world, and rather put your eyes and your ears and your heart not on the creation, but on the Creator. Because it might appear like things are getting pretty crazy in the world, but the divine has never left the creation, and there is a plan. And each one of us has a part to that plan inside of ourselves. That is our own unique piece to this jigsaw puzzle of 7 billion people or whatever. And the earth, regardless of the things that humanity has done to it with pollution and environmental degradation and tyranny and injustice and horror, that peace and sustainability and justice are the normal state of affairs within the heart. And so if we want to influence the external world, or as we influence the external world, or if we want to contribute in the best way that we possibly can, it's for us to love ourselves and stop judging ourselves and search and seek diligently, humbly, with gratitude. Activate your gratitude for more than maybe you're practicing now. Because gratitude is the foundation and the mode, the method of exchange and the currency for the new world. And there's no fulfillment without gratitude. So fulfillment is a direct expression of our gratitude. The more grateful we are, the more fulfilled we become. So if you want to be fulfilled in your life, and a lot of people I know are not, the fulfillment comes with small experiences from the external world. Oh, it fulfill us for a moment. But the kind of fulfillment that we're really talking about on that soul level doesn't come from the external world. It comes from within us, and it comes and is generated through our gratitude. So what if you could develop a practice through prayer, meditation, yoga, whatever you use, to create an inner resilience, raising that kundalini life force energy up into your body, into your mind, into your higher chakras, to create a resilience through breath and movement practice, so that regardless of external conditions in the world, you still have gratitude and fulfillment and love and clarity and creativity, regardless of external conditions in the world. That's what we're moving towards. That would be really groovy. Because again, the divine and the divine plan for each one of us is in there. And it connects us with the earth, who's more powerful than the environmental degradation that's been done unto her. And she's moving through this precipice of transformation and will emerge victorious. So we want to ride the earth and stay connected with the earth, because she knows where she's going. We don't want to be in our heads. We don't want to be in our lower emotions. We want to be in our hearts, and the heart connects us to the earth through gratitude. And then the earth and the goddess will inform you who you are and what you need to do, and how you need to be in any one particular situation. And whatever happens in the world, you'll be guided to go here or to go there or to do this or to not do that. And you'll become invisible to the forces of the world that would harm you. And the divine will manifest itself directly through you and through your life, through your heart, through your life, through your eyes, through your words, and vibrate in a frequency that will make you invincible to the ways of the world. And you'll be lifted up, almost like in flying saucers, almost like in consciousness, into higher realms of being, while the earth does whatever she does. And you'll be spared, and you'll be guided, and you'll be protected, and you'll be caressed, and you'll be rocked, and you'll be loved. And you'll be returned to the place where you chose to be, and you'll be of service to the new world. So fear not, because the divine is in charge. And don't get caught in what you see on TV as being real, but instead Let the guidance from your heart and your soul lead you back to the original creation, where everything is perfect and you are light. Light doesn't get sick, doesn't get a cold, never dies. Connect with the light and ride the wave of love into the new world. And if I can help you in any way, go to my website and send me a message and we'll talk.
Oh, I love that, Mark. And I'll be sure to have links to all of your stuff for people. And you have been so amazing. Thank you so much for all of your insights.
Thanks, Sue. Thanks for inviting me. You have a blessed day.
Thank you.